Council meeting this evening on November 28, 2011. We appreciate you being with us for this very special meeting we have tonight. And as we go through our agenda, if you would like to speak on any of the items on our agenda, you may do so. Just come to the podium up here and speak and give us your name. And we'll be glad to recognize you at any particular time. And if you will try to hold your comments to 5 minutes, we would be very appreciative of that, so that any and everyone can have an opportunity to speak. As we begin our meeting, we'll have council prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
Let us pray. Almighty God, our Father, your generous goodness comes to us new every day. By the work of your Spirit, lead us to acknowledge your goodness, give thanks for your benefits, and serve you in willing obedience. Go with each of our council members, the new as well as the experienced. Be their shield every day, and give them wisdom, courage, and integrity in all their deliberations. Be the guardian of their families as they serve here. Bless our nation, president, state, governor, and all who serve their community in any capacity. Protect and defend our freedom at home and abroad as they protect us. Give special blessings to Beverly Clyburn, who is culminating a distinguished career as a member of the Aiken City Council. We honor her for her service to this council, as well as her service to many other organizations, which makes Aiken a special place to live. Be with Gail Diggs as she continues her commitment to our community as a member of the Aiken City Council. We applaud her willingness to make Aiken a better place to work, live, and worship. Hear us, O Lord, as we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which we stand, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to our agenda this evening?
Mr. Mayor, I did have a conversation with the chairman of the executive committee for the Aiken Corporation, Wade Brody, prior to tonight's meeting, and he is asking that under new business, item 5, the first reading of an ordinance to modify the interest rate on the URS building Aiken Corporation note be deleted from tonight's agenda. And then in another matter, I would like to add to the agenda the first reading of an ordinance to advance municipal building expansion funds.
Okay, we'll put that over on right after the December council meeting scheduled. That's okay.
If we could, Mayor, that would, if we could put that under new business as the new number 5.
Fine, that would be okay. Okay. All right, any others? If not, do we have a show of hands?
I move we accept the agenda as revised.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Next item is the minutes, consideration of the minutes of the November 14, 2011 regular meeting. Any discussion necessary on those?
Mr. Mayor, there's one thing that I would still like to see put in the minutes in relation to our action on the Aiken Corp loan last time from the city, or the loan modification. I think we still need to put the calculations in of how long it takes to pay that off and what is left after the 5 years. So I'd like to see that done by city staff does the bookkeeping. So if we can do that and just add it in later on would be good.
Okay, very good. Got that, Rich?
Yes.
All right. Do we have a motion second to approve the minutes?
Mr. Mayor, I'll move that we accept the minutes as amended.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. On presentations, our first item this evening is Juilliard and Aiken banner display request. Mr. Pierce, please.
As I put in my memo, Mayor, the city has supported the annual Juilliard and Aiken Festival for a number of years. That's coming up in March. And we have a request from the president of the Juilliard and Aiken organization. Dr. Sandra Field is here tonight. She has a request for the placement of banners related to the festival. Sandra, yeah, if you could come up here to the microphone, would be great. Thanks. Ms. Rideout, can we get to those pages on the agenda, please? Starts at page 21.
Page 23. Starts at 23.
I think the banner is actually on page 24. The banner that's on page 24, yes, ma'am. That's it. Thank you.
Mr. Pierce, and first let me take this opportunity to thank the City Council for your support of Juilliard and Aiken over the past 3 years. I can't believe 2012 is going to be our fourth year, so we're very excited. And to add to the whole festive feel of the event, we would love to have our banners displayed in the city during the time period of February 1st through March 17th. The festival this year is March 10th through the 16th, so we would like a month prior to build anticipation for the event, and then the banners to stay in place during the week and then removed on the 17th. And we've identified five intersections where we would like banners hung. Would you like me to detail those?
I think Council has those in the memo. Park
those?
And Lawrence, Newberry and Richland, Park and Newberry, Chesterfield and Park, and Chesterfield and Richland.
Correct. And we try to make them as simple as possible by highlighting our logo with the website address. And you may be wondering why there's no date there. We're trying to be cost-effective and use these repeatedly. So we didn't put the date on it. We think if we can get people to go to the website, then they'll find all the necessary information.
Okay. All right. Sandra, thank you.
Thank you.
Council have comments? I think it's a great thing. First of all, it's wonderful that Juilliard is in our city so often, and the work that y'all are doing to maintain that and to build it as the years go by. And thank you.
Thank you.
I think anything that we can do as a council, we certainly need to do that because of the education for the kids and just all of the whole ball of wax there that that Juilliard means to us.
Thank you so much.
We need a vote of council just to approve the request.
We have a motion and a second then to
I so move.
Approve that.
Second.
Okay. All right. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Item two is a presentation to Council Member Beverly Clyburn.
I'm very sad to report, Mayor, that it's my understanding that Ms. Clyburn's last meeting is tonight.
Thank you.
After 28 years of dedicated service, I just want to publicly state how much I appreciate Council Member Clyburn's support and comments and helpful information that she has shared with me during the time that we've worked together, not just as your city manager and assistant city manager, but also as your city solicitor and staff attorney for 10 years. And I understand, Mayor, that you may have some items to present to Ms. Clyburn as well. Mr. Beanbaugh, I need to see you if you could come up, please.
Certainly do. Let me walk over here toward Beverly. I hope everybody can hear me, can you? Beverly, we want to present this plaque to you for your service to the city all these years. Presented to Beverly Clyburn in recognition of her leadership and dedicated service to the city of Aiken as a city council member, November 14, 1988 to November 28, 2011 by the city council on this date, November 28, 2011. And Beverly, I want to say, and I'm sure others want to comment as well, it's been a pleasure working with you for all these 23 years or so. We've worked together that long, and we're going to miss you. These times, of course, always come. They're happy times and they're sad times. It's sad to be losing you from our midst. For as a city council person, we've done so many wonderful things. But it's happy time, too, because you'll be happy. I mean, of course, Beverly's anxious to spend a little bit more time with family, and I know Bill's going to be happy as well. But we're going to miss you. And it's also happy that we'll be getting Gail Diggs as a new council member, and that's the happy part of it as well. Gail will be wonderful. Beverly, I've always depended on you, and I think other council members too, to be a very level-headed person, always listening, willing to work with everyone as we go through the agendas year after year and go through all the various meetings we have. And I appreciate that very much. You're quick to listen and slow to speak. But when you do speak, she speaks, let me tell you. And we're happy for that. So again, thank you. Thank you so much from council. This is from council. For all of your dedicated hard work.
Thank you.
Something he says, go right ahead, and I'm gonna tell you that I don't have anything prepared to say, but it's been a real nice trip. I backed into this. My husband was all the way in Seattle, Washington, when I filed to run, and I called him up. I called my dad first, and he said, go ahead and do it. I'd be happy if you would. My dad's no longer with us, but then I called my husband, and he said, well, I'll take a look at it when I get back, and if it looks okay, then we'll let you do it. If not, you'll just He was not in politics at the time, but I always respected his opinions. I had a very little girl who's now sitting on the front row with her little girl at the time, and it was just something I thought was going to last a little while, but it's lasted all this time. And I can tell you that when you're having fun, time flies. And I know it's been a little rough sometimes up here, but through it all, I think I've had some good times. And it just perked me up so tonight when I saw Don Sprawls walk in, because Don sat with me for so many years, and we pass notes, and and it was just so wonderful having such a quiet spirit sitting next to you. And then Mike, I never did anything financial on council unless I heard Mike's opinion. And it just means so much to have yourself surrounded by smart people, and that's what it's been for me. I think you've got a bunch of smart people sitting up here. I mean, they're really sharp. They read the agenda. They talk to people, and most of the times they know what they're talking about. And so when I decided, I said, look, I can't do this much longer. I'm getting older. And before I lose it all, I need to find somebody who's willing to take this on and run with it. And my first call was to a young lady, and she said what I expected her to say, let me think about it. And she thought about it. And I've known her for a long time. And I've got a presentation for her, and I want her to share it with council. And it's something I live by. What does it say?
Keep calm.
Carry on.
Keep calm and carry on. I want to thank my council members for being respectful. Not just because I'm a female, but sometimes my opinions may have been all the way in left field, and they were all respectful. And I want to tell them that I appreciate all the hard work they do for all the different people that I never get a chance to see. I know you speak for a lot of people that I don't see every day, and I respect that. Because I feel in my heart that you have respected me when I have been trying to speak for some of the others that you don't always see. And as I leave tonight, I'm going to go with my family. And you'll see me again, because it's kind of hard to put this many years in. And like Pat is sitting out there, and Don sitting out there, and Mike sitting out there, and I don't recognize anybody else that served with me. But you just come back because you love the city and you want to make sure that things go right. And I'm going to leave this with you. The city staff that I work with has proved to me that they love their jobs. They're honest people, and they're hardworking people. And I just hope that they can continue to get y'all's respect. From the person who picks up your garbage, and believe me, I get more calls about when the garbage is not picked up than I do about your tax bills. So you need to understand that everybody, from Richard on down, they really do work hard. And I want to thank them for that, because that has really made our job, it does make our job easier when they do what they're supposed to do. So thank all of y'all so much for coming out. I want to thank my family. My husband is on the front row. If he would just stand. I know y'all know him.
Have
just
stand
up anyway. And this is my baby girl, who used to come to meetings with me, and we'd put two chairs together and let her sleep when it was time for her to sleep. Miss Courtney. My latest grandchild is outside, and that's probably a good place for her right now, because it's close to her bedtime, and she really doesn't know that she's in a meeting and needs to be quiet. She just is going to do what she wants to do. But thank all of you so much to come. I don't want to get started calling names, but I do see some powerful people out there. And I just want y'all to know that the things that you have done to help me help others did not go unnoticed. And thank you for all you do. And you've got somebody else that you need to give that help to, and that's Gail Diggs. Please honor and respect her. She's a smart girl. I know she is, because I've known her since what grade, Gail? Eighth grade. So thank all of you so much. And do I leave? I think I'm supposed to get my stuff and leave.
Well, there's actually some additional stuff you need to get.
Okay.
And on behalf of staff, here's your first retirement check.
Oh.
just don't spend all that money.
Oh, well, in honor of leaving. I wanted to present this to somebody. It goes to the clerk of court.
City Court.
When I opened my mail Friday, I got a summons for summary court. So I tried to mail it, and it got left where the mailman is supposed to pick it up. He didn't take it, so I'm going to have to give it to somebody.
You just give it to myself.
Thank you. I know you noticed that the congressman has walked in, and I'm going to ask him to stand, because he is family, even though he's in
law. Thank you for being with us, Congressman. Thank you. We had a fingers crossed that you were going to get here.
Did you know that?
Huh? Yeah. Somebody told me. Somebody close to you told me.
Okay.
Need some help, Emily?
I do need some help.
We'll help you get out of here.
Okay. Gail, I'm going to leave some mess for you to turn up, okay? Not just here, but other places, too.
Let's see. See you later.
All righty.
Yeah, we'll get your name light too. Beverly, before you leave, didn't mean to exclude council members from saying some of the things that they may want to say. So if you can hang in here for a few minutes, would council like to make comments? I know you would.
Beverly, I would like to take this opportunity. There's no way to express the encouragement that you've given to me in the 6 years that I've been here on City Council. You've been tremendous. You've been tremendous from a support standpoint. And I've always knew that you were very level-headed. You were a very smart lady. And I would sit here and watch you listen, as the mayor had said. You listened to every issue, and you found the fair way to settle those issues. And it's just, I know you've been in education all your life, and you didn't know when you were sitting over there that you were educating me over on this side of the council bench, but I just want to thank you, and thank you for your years of service to this city, and we always know what you've done for us, and thank you.
Beverly, I just want to personally say that you're going to be missed. I know that we're getting a good person to serve in that seat there, but I've watched you over the years, not only with your leadership on City Council, but in your personal life, and how you've served with dignity and pride. And you have that certain temperance that I'm trying to learn to inherit. But a tremendous temperance, and I just have appreciated calling you and just temper me down where I can reason with some of the issues. You are a loving friend, a caring friend, a wonderful wife and support for Bill Clyburn. I don't know what he would do without you. And I mean that sincerely, but a loving mother and just a good support for my family. And I wish you the best. I know that with your wonderful grandchildren, you're going to enjoy it. But this is not the end for Beverly Clyburn. I know that she is too busy. She's got too many things that she wants to do, and we'll see her in other circles. I just don't think God's through with her yet. So thank you for serving.
Beverly, as a short timer, I've really enjoyed it. I've only worked with you for about 2 years, but your reputation preceded you, and I knew you were like the stabilizing influence on the council, and I love the way you always kind of whispered a real low, so people really had to kind of perk up their ears to make sure they heard you. But fortunately, you always made sense. So I think that was a great addition, and thank you for your service. And I hope to see you back here often.
I think counsel is obviously going to lose your experience because somehow in the midst of all of our discussions, you always came through with a point that many of us didn't think about. A lot of people don't realize about 95% of our votes are unanimous, unlike a higher level. But on occasion, we get pretty entrenched in positions. But on occasion, we get entrenched in the positions, but we've always had respect for one another. We can agree to disagree, and when the meeting is over, we go our separate ways, talking to each other and so forth. So you brought a level of civility to the council that I might have created the need for on occasion, but I really appreciate working with you, and I know that Aiken is not going to say goodbye to you. You'll be involved in other activities pretty quickly, if you aren't already. So, well, I'll miss you, Beverly.
All the things that have been said are very appropriate, and I first met you back in 2007 when I appeared before council a number of times arguing a point out there. And so it's been good working with you there, and then we also volunteer in some of the same organizations, so I'm looking forward to working with you in those. So wish you the best.
Beverly, I've said things already, and I will say them again. We're going to miss you. Thank you for your steadfastness and your determination, but most of all for your listening ability and the ability to pull out facts from some of the issues that we're talking about to get down to the facts, because in the long run, that's what makes a difference, the facts of the issues. And if we could stick to those all the time, we'd be in much better shape than just what we think or whatever. And so please come back and see us. And as I mentioned to you earlier, you can always give us emails. If you don't like what we're doing, you can suggest ways we can do it better. And, so others do that. So, but it's been a real pleasure for those the 23 years that we've worked together. And may God bless you in all your endeavors as you move on. And as Alessia said, you'll be involved in something else. That's for sure. Something else positive and very worthwhile. And that's what you're all about. Mm-hmm. So I thank you also from the bottom of my heart for what you've meant to the city and to council. Thank you. You certainly can.
I would just like to thank her for all the years of support and encouragement, and she's been an inspiration to me, and it's quite an honor to be chosen to be her president. That's quite a compliment to me, and I love you, Beverly, and I'm going to be a frequent visitor to your house. Every time I get the agenda delivered to my home, I will come.
Right.
But I thank God for Beverly. She's been a very good support system for me,
Mr. Mayor, if I might add, the congressman was in the central Savannah River area and wanted this to be a surprise, and the person that had the secret was Bill Clyburn. So his concern was whether the secret would spill over too much not to surprise Beverly. But it's quite a welcome addition to have him in our presence.
Absolutely. Come back anytime. Is anyone else in the audience who would like to say anything? Okay. Wait a minute, I see one hand. Don, Don would like to say something.
I have a new microphone.
Yeah.
I'll be able to look at me. I just want to take time to thank you for all your dedicated years of service and the privilege that I had sitting by you for 8 years. From the time I walked into council the first time, she took me by the hand, showed me the ropes, and we became good friends and voted together and talked together and passed notes. And when I got sworn in the second time, the first thing she said, "Now, where are you going to sit?" And I said, "Where do you think I'm going to sit?" two stories came to mind this afternoon, and we'd just gotten two new fire trucks in, and we had a meeting over at Public Safety, and we were looking at new fire trucks, and Beverly said, "I want to ride in that new fire truck." I said, "Well, fire me in, let's go." So we rode all over town. And she says, "You know, the last time we ordered fire trucks, there was a problem with the brakes." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Are the brakes good on this truck?" I said, "Oh, yeah, they'll stop on a dime." She said, "Well, I want you to prove it." So I said, "Well, hang on." So once she climbed back in the seat after getting off the floorboard, she said, "I believe it." Said, you can take me back now. And the only other thing I can remember, I don't think Beverly ever lied to me but one time. He told me one day, she said, "You go fishing a lot. I sure wish you'd bring me some fresh fish." So one day I had a bunch of fish, and I took them over to Bill and Beverly, and Beverly went out in the garage. She said, "Those sure are some pretty fish. Oh, those sure are pretty." She said, "You know, Bill's never been fishing in his life." I said, "Beverly, tell me a black man has never been fishing in his life." So anyway, thank you for all you've done for the city. It was a pleasure to serve with you, and good luck in the future.
Mayor, if I may?
Yes, sir. Certainly.
Thank you very much, members of council.
I yield. you have to come over here, Congressman. Yes.
Okay.
We want to make sure we get this on tape.
This is the first time.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to say a few words. I was not going to say anything, Don, until you wanted to be shown a black person never been fishing. Now you see two. Maybe it runs in the family. I don't know what it is. I've never been fishing. I've never been hunting, except for golf balls. I just wanted to come over tonight. I did not tell Bill. We talked this afternoon, and I didn't tell him I was coming. And the reason I didn't tell him I was coming is because I know Bill. And I wanted it to be a surprise. And I knew, I just felt sure, that if he knew, he would tell Beverly. Tells her almost everything. But Beverly has been like a sister to me. I grew up with two brothers. I did not have any sisters. And we have gotten to know each other. And she is one person who you can always rely on to tell you exactly what the facts are. Often, I would not want to hear them. But she's been that kind of a person. And when I heard this was going to be her last meeting, I wanted to come over and surprise her and let her know how much Emily and I appreciate our relationship, and to let her know also that next weekend we'll celebrate your 23 years in real fashion. And Leslie has promised to come down and join us. So look forward to our spending together next weekend and Christmas, and us just being the same family that we've always been. Thank you so much.
And the
current president of the Governor Aiken Park Neighborhood Association. Beverly, on behalf of the Governor Aiken Neighborhood Association, we would like to thank you for the service that you have rendered to us, the advice you have given us, and under the leadership of Elvin McDowell, to have been able to have gotten Neighborhood Park. And I will agree with the comments that she said, is that she's very quiet-spirited and says, not now. We're working on it. Not now. I've got it. Okay. So I just want you to know we do appreciate the support that you have given us to that. And, Gail, you are on our agenda.
Okay, if there's no one else, I think we better move along on our agenda. You're welcome to stay, of course. Gee, I don't think Beverly's going to leave. Okay, that's good. I hope not. Okay, we'll move on to the old business. First item is a report by the Election Commission.
To Mayor Kavanaugh and to members of the Aiken City Council, to the citizens of the City of Aiken, ladies and gentlemen, the Municipal Election Commission desires to make its report on the 2011 City Council election. The City of Aiken Memorandum, date November 28, 2011, to Aiken City Council, from Municipal Election Commission, subject General Election 2011. The City of Aiken conducted a general election on November the 8th, 2011, to fill three expiring seats on City Council: Mayor, Council District 1, Council District 3, and also a vote on referendum to change the method of electing City Council members from the current 4-2-1 single-member district to a 6-1 single-member district plan, with the mayor being elected at large. The election was advertised through the newspaper as prescribed by law. Five persons qualified. Two filed for mayor on the Republican ticket, Fred B. Kavanaugh and Jet Beckham. Two filed for Council District 1, Gail Bush Diggs on the Democratic ticket and Sonny O'Donovan on the Republican ticket. One filed for Council District 3, Dick DeWar on the Republican ticket. Since two persons filed for the mayor's seat on the Republican ticket, a primary election was held on Tuesday, September the 13th, 2011, for Jet Beckham and Fred B. Kavanaugh. Fred B. Kavanaugh was the winner in the election with 1,524 votes. Jet Beckham received 278 votes. The following names were placed on the official ballot along with the referendum: Fred B. Kavanaugh for mayor, Republican; Gail Bush Diggs for Council District 1, Democrat; Sonny O'Donovan for City Council District 1, Republican; Dick DeWar for City Council District 3, Republican. On October the 7th, 2011, the Municipal Election Commission received a letter from Sonny O'Donovan stating that on September 24th, 2011, she suffered an injury, and on the advice of her doctor, she has to withdraw from the campaign of City Council. On October 13th, 2011, the Municipal Election Commission, along with the city attorney, Mr. Gary Smith, met to officially accept the Donovan letter of withdrawal. Since the ballots had already been printed, Sonny O'Donovan's name remained on the ballot for the election. However, it was noted that any votes for Ms. O'Donovan would not be counted. With 1,596 ballots cast, the results of the election were as follows. Fred B. Kavanaugh, Mayor, Republican, 1,328 votes. Gail Bush Diggs, Council District 1, Democrat, 216 votes. Dick DeWall, Council District 3, Republican, 361 votes. The referendum results. Yes, 931 votes. No, 653 votes. The Municipal Election Commission hereby certifies the election of Fred B. Kavanaugh for mayor, Gail B. Diggs for Council District 1, Dick DeWall for Council District 3. The term of each office shall be for a period of 4 years. Municipal Election Commission also hereby certifies the passage of the referendum to change the method of electing city council members from the current 4-2-1 single-member district plan to a 6-1 single-member district plan, with the mayor being elected at large. See the tabulation of votes on the following page. Respectfully submitted, Municipal Election Commission, Richard Johnson, Jr., H.A. McLaren, and Keith R. Wood. Mayor that, and Council Member, that concludes our report, unless there are questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard, very much for your report. Are there any questions of Mr. Johnson? Okay. I guess there are none, sir. Thank you very much for your work on the commission,
sir.
Leading the commission.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do we have a motion to second to officially accept this? Can we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passage unanimously.
Yeah, I would also like to acknowledge the other members of the Municipal Election Commission, Mac McLaren and Keith Wood.
Right. Are they with us tonight? Either one? Both? Okay.
Okay, and also we, on behalf of the Election Commission, we'd like to extend our appreciation to the staff for assisting us during the election.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And would you express your appreciation to the other two members that are not here?
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Okay, looks like it's time for the oaths.
Is this like renewing your wedding vows?
Mayor of the Municipality of Aiken,
I will faithfully
As long as I can.
He definitely tolerated me for 4 years.
Dick, there's a reason why Beverly wanted her to run.
Yes. Punishment. You just thought you might do.
Okay, moving on our agenda. Item 3 under old business. Appointments to boards, commissions, or committees. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Homoki has recommended Sharon Brown for appointment to the Arts Commission. Her term would expire April 11, 2013. Councilmember Price has recommended that Larry Ogletree be appointed to the Board of Zoning Appeals. Those terms are for 3 years, and if reappointed, Mr. Ogletree's term would expire December 1, 2014. Mayor, you've recommended John McMichael for appointment to the Planning Commission to replace Bill Reynolds. If appointed, Mr. McMichael's term would expire December 1, 2013. Also, at our last meeting, Council discussed the appointment of Sue Ellis to the Aiken-Barnwell Community Action Agency Board to fill the position that was vacated by James Millage. So for Council consideration tonight, it's approval of these four persons to serve in these capacities. And just a reminder that at the November 14 meeting, Council received a request from Aiken Downtown Development Association for a council member to serve on their ADDA board. They meet once a month. And council also needs to consider an appointment of a council member to serve on the Aiken Regional Transportation Study Committee to fill the position that council member Clyburn has vacated.
Okay, sir. All right. Why don't we approve the appointments, and then we'll talk about these other two. Okay. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move the approval of the appointments of Sharon Brown, Larry Ogletree, John McMichael, and
James Miller.
Sue Ellis.
Sue Ellis.
I second.
Okay. All right. Very good. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Hey, we've got those two openings. What we normally do is go by seniority to see if anyone that's in a seniority wants to take those positions.
How often does the Arts Commission?
Every quarter.
Once a quarter?
Every quarter, yeah.
I think my schedule would allow me to do that, Mr. Mayor, so if council is pleased with that, I would be happy to fill that position.
Okay, all right. And many times, if there's nothing on the agenda, we won't have a meeting. We'll go to the next quarter, or more or less something comes up, which is not usually likely. Okay, how about the ADDA board?
I wonder if we might not want to, on a scale, does it, if we don't want to treat that like the Planning Commission, just rotate amongst us to attend that meeting, unless somebody wants it.
I kind of agree with that. I don't think really a council member should be on the board to start out with. I mean, they should be an ex officio, and the best way to do ex officio would be to do it on a rotational basis like we do with the Planning Commission. But to be a member of the board would intimate that you'd be voting, and that's kind of like conflict of interest if you're on a board and you vote, and then you vote as a council member.
Any other thoughts on that? I mean, that's fine. Fine with me.
We'll need to check, Mayor.
It may be in the ADDA bylaws that there is a council member named as ex officio, so why don't I check into that, and I'll bring this back at the December 12th meeting,
okay,
if that's satisfactory with council.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then for next time, Mayor, Council Member Price had recommended Terry Provost to the Planning Commission to fill a vacant position there. We would take that up at the December 12th meeting. Council does have Terry Provost resume in your materials.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to make a couple of renominations.
Okay, certainly.
Ms. Lucy Knowles for the DRB, and then Judy Turner for the Board of Zoning Appeals.
Okay, are there any others?
I'd like to reappoint Charles Erbs to the Design Review Board, and I will have a nominee for the Environmental Energy Committee at the next meeting.
Okay. Any others? Okay, if not, those will be on the agenda for our next meeting.
December 12th.
December 12th.
Do we want to go ahead and take a vote, Mayor, for Councilmember Wells to serve on the
Arts
Commission?
Yes, we do. We certainly do. Do we have a motion and a second for that?
So moved. Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor?
Yes.
Passes unanimously. So, Don, you're on it. Okay. Item 4 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to reduce the city real property tax millage rate from 66 mills to 62 mills. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Every time the county does reassessment of the values of property in Aiken County, by state law, we're required to review our millage rate. As I stated at the last meeting, we have a projected revenue amount in the budget the council approved in June for property tax revenues. However, when you adopted a millage rate, you adopted 66 mills, which were based on the assessed value for property in Aiken County as of that date. your finance director, Kim Abney, and I have discussed this matter. We've reviewed it with our city attorney, Gary Smith, and we, based on those discussions, are recommending a rollback of the millage rate from 66 mills to 62 mills. Council will recall in 2007, after that reassessment, we actually reduced the millage rate from 71 mills to 66 mills at that time. So we believe that that's an appropriate millage rate. You've typically had whole number millage rates. Other governments have done other millage rates with a fractional millage rate, but for our purposes, the 62 mills works best. So at your November 14 meeting, you unanimously approved the reduction of the millage rate from 66 to 62 mills. This is second reading and public hearing of the ordinance to reduce the millage rate from 66 to 62 mills.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing, and if anyone in the audience wants to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the second reading and public hearing of the ordinance to reduce the city real property tax millage rates from 66 mills to 62.
Okay. Second, Mr. Mayor.
A second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under new business, the first reading of an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2010 to 11 audited financial statement. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. Under state law, the city of Aiken is required to produce an annual audit. We have a representative here from Elliott Davis, who is our auditor of the city finances, and we have a presentation to make. Lori, if you could come to the microphone this time about our audit for fiscal year that ended June 30th, 2011.
I'm happy to be here with you tonight on this occasion, and it's always nice to see someone who has actually served their community for the longevity that you had with your council member who retired tonight. And like you say, you're fortunate to have that type of leadership in Aiken. As a shareholder on the audit team, I'm here tonight to just briefly highlight some of your information in your annual financial audit. We are available should you have questions that maybe you have after this meeting tonight or at any time. Kim or Richard can give you our contact information by email or phone. If you have your audit report in front of you, I'm going to briefly highlight some of your information tonight. As your external independent accounting firm, in conjunction with your audit, we've issued three opinions, and I'm going to kind of walk through those opinions and tell you what those mean. The first opinion is on page 1 and 2 of your financial statements, titled Report of Independent Public Accountant. This is what we call an unqualified opinion or a clean opinion. It's the highest level of opinion that you could get in relation to your financial statements, that they are fairly presented not only in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, but also with governmental auditing standards. I'm going to briefly talk to you a little bit about changes from the aspect of the city as a whole, what happened financially from prior year audit to the current year audit, and to look at your statement of net assets on page 13, there's some real positive trends as we still continue to see some weak economies as it relates to our governmental entities. Your trends are very positive, and I wanted to kind of highlight some of those for you. On page 13, you see your governmental activities and your business type activities in the total column to the right. You ended the year with right at $162 million in total assets. In relation to prior year, that number's up about $5 million, so about a little over 3% of growth in your total assets. Now, your biggest concentration of assets are in your structures, in your infrastructure, in your building like we're in here today, in your capital assets. There's a lot of detail about those capital assets. They were about $120 million at the end of the audit period. It's about 74% of your total assets. Your note 6 and page 41 and 42 of the report, if you look at page 41, you'll see what happened during the course of the audit period. What you began with what you added as capital assets and what was removed or obsolete. Page 42 gives you your business type activities, your water and sewer fund, and your stormwater fund also, your changes in those assets for the year. The biggest thing you want to see is that you're replacing capital assets faster than you're consuming or depreciating or using those. And there's very positive trends there in that note disclosure you'll see. You're investing more in your capital assets for your community. Going back to page 13, the other thing I wanted to highlight as far as total assets, and looking at your second largest asset, which is your cash and your investments, we always look at that as far as your liquidity and where you are. We've attached some charts for you that are stapled that look like this. And the very first page of those charts give you some good information about where you are with cash and short-term investments as far as liquidity and where you've been over a period of time. 5+ years. You'll see that first chart talks about your general fund cash. It's up a little bit from prior year, but pretty consistent. The chart in the middle of the page talks about your total cash and investments for the city as a whole. You see very positive trends there. Now, the things about these charts is you want to see steady, same balances. You don't want to see them jumping up and down. And so that shows a lot of stability in your operations. The last chart talks about your general fund, the number of days of operating cash reserves, and you can see that we went to approximately 211 days of operating cash from 205 in the prior year. Recommendation from the Government Finance Officers Association and several other authorities are to have about 3 to 6 months in that cash reserve, and y'all are right at that, in that top end of that range. So a lot of stability in your management of your cash and investments. Going back to page 13 of your audited financials, we looked at total assets. So if you look at total liabilities, you're going to see that our liabilities went up, actually. They went up about 17%. And you ask yourself, okay, what was the biggest driver there? They were up about $2.2 million. The thing that's driving your liabilities up is primarily your other post-employment benefit obligation. That was right at $2 million increase for the year. That's pretty much the primary driver of your liabilities. Since you really have no GO debt related to your governmental activities. That's something a lot of our governments have struggled with, how they're going to fund that liability. And that's sitting as a note disclosure in your report. Let me kind of direct you to where that is. It's a pretty significant liability for you. If you look at the bottom of page 52, top of page 53, you'll see that other post-employment benefit obligation. You funded about a little over $500,000 for that obligation this year, but you still have an estimated liability at the end of this audit period of right at $4.9 million. Moving back to page 13 to kind of summarize, okay, assets went up, liabilities went up. What happened to our net assets or our equity position? The good story here is that your assets really went up more than your liabilities went up, so we had a positive trend on net assets. We increased your net assets about 2.3%, or right at $3 million for the audit period. I'm going to direct your attention to page 16 and 17. This is your balance sheet for your governmental funds. And one of the things that I want to bring your attention to is that the city was required to adopt a new governmental accounting standard this year related to fund balances called GASB 54. If you see at the bottom of page 16, you'll see the fund balances. You'll see some new categories. We talked about the standard last year, I think, when I was with you. Some changes. From what we'd seen in the past, we would have reserved and unreserved and designated in this category. You'll see you've got some new terms here: non-spendable fund balance, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned fund balance. So instead of having three terms here, you've got five. You'll see that some note disclosure here that might help you a little bit more for what things are restricted for. That's a new note on page 54. And it's a very long note. That kind of gives you a lot of detail to what something might be restricted for or what it might be committed for example, for recreation or parks, or what it might be assigned. Of course, your restricted is an external type restriction. You normally see with federal and state grant funds that you receive or taxes that you could possibly levy for a specific purpose. Your committed is going to be one that's going to be a restriction imposed by you as council members, one that could be restricted internally, but you could turn around and unrestrict that. That is what they consider committed. So it's not restricted forever. It is committed for a while, but you can come back and say if they say didn't need to use all those funds, you could uncommit those and commit those for something else. There's some definitions in here in Note 1 that kind of help you with those new terms, but you'll be seeing those in the future.
What are the new ones again? We had three and we ended up with five.
Right, on page 16.
I'm on 16.
Yeah, they're non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned.
Well, you said there were two new ones. So which two did we get?
Well, in the past you had three.
Okay.
Reserved and unreserved and designated. Those have been replaced by these five new ones.
Okay.
You really had restricted funds before. They were just probably called reserved funds.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them have just been renamed, like what you would consider designated in the past or what you've got as assigned now. So there are kind of some name changes there. We tried to, let me see if I can spot that for you. I think on page 34 of your notes, you'll see some of those definitions coming in. The new definitions of what restricted really means, what committed means, and what assigned means. Just kind of moving you through some more numbers. Page 19 and 20, this is your statement of revenues and expenditures. What happened with my revenues and what did I use them for as far as expenditures during the course of the audit period? This is for your governmental. You'll see your general fund. You had revenues exceeded your expenditures of about $400,000. Then you see your capital project sales tax. A lot of your capital asset additions were funded by your capital project sales tax revenue sources. And I know we were kind of short on time tonight. Just another page that I think is important, your general fund being your main operating fund. Page 56 gives you a good comparison of budget versus actual on your general fund. You'll see some positive variances. We actually collected about $560,000 more than we budgeted from a revenue standpoint, about 2% more. Actually expended less than you actually budgeted. So you had a very positive variance there on your expenditures, which led to, a positive budget variance overall. A lot of good control over your funds from a budget standpoint. I'm going to move you to the very back of the report. We issued two other opinions, as we talked about, with this annual audit process. One on page 109 relates to your internal controls over financial reporting and compliance with laws and regs. This is an opinion that's saying we, during the course of audit, did not come across any problems that we considered material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in your internal controls over financial reporting, and no issues with compliance with laws or regulations. Page 111 and 112 is the last opinion that we issued. This is related to your receipt of federal funds, federal grant funds, and how you expended those. Those were tested in conjunction with your annual audit. It's called a single audit process. And we tested a couple of your programs. You'll see on page 113 and 114. The federal expenditures. We tested your community development block grants and for public safety partnership funds. And those are all found to be in compliance with what you could do with those funds and how you managed those and how you expended those funds. So that's a clean opinion as to how you expended the federal funds. Just to kind of note, you received and expended about $1.7 million in federal expenditures during the course of this audit period, which is very close, very flat as compared to the prior year. You received about $1.7 also in the prior year. That's a good thing. We are seeing some of our governmental clients actually have a decrease in federal dollars because as the stimulus monies are going away, yours were held pretty flat, which I think that's good that you've recruited funds in. You've got one other report in front of you that looks like this. It's blue and white with a staple. This is what we call a SAS 114 report. This is pretty boilerplate, not a lot of numbers in here, but it talks a little bit about the audit process and how we plan and design audit procedures and target our audit procedures. We use materiality. We try to do some rotation. We try to look at your risk where some changes may have happened, maybe within the city, where they'd be, you know, a retirement or something where there's more risk. We will target procedures. Talks a little bit about some of the accounting estimates. The biggest one we know we've talked about is that OPEB liability where you have an actuarial calculation. That is an estimate within your financial statements. It's not an exact number, but an estimate. Just to let you also know, during the course of the audit process, we did not have any disagreements with your management team or any significant issues or difficulties encountered. There's, in the Appendix B, a copy of our arrangement letter, a copy of the representation letter, just for information for you. And Appendix C is what we normally talk about, new accounting standards coming your way. There's a good little synopsis at the beginning of Appendix C about GASB 54, the fund balance reporting that y'all implemented this year. The good news is the other standards that are coming your way go on for several pages, but I'm pleased to tell you that none of them impact you. A lot of them are dealing with derivative debt instruments that aren't really applicable to you. So it looks like y'all will get a little breathing room as far as some new standards, nothing that you'll have significant to have to adopt in the next 2 years. I do know that there's been a lot of concern in our governments in South Carolina about some changes they see coming their way as it relates to the South Carolina retirement system. And I know y'all are involved through your public safety officers. There has been some recent movement with some legal issues to the extent that y'all, there is belief that that fund at the state level is probably underfunded and that there will be a change where y'all will have to book a portion of your respective liability probably 2 years out as it relates to the state's retirement system funds. And I'll be glad to talk with you more about it. It's out there. It's something that's fairly new, a lot of talk about in the last 60 days. But I do see that coming your way as far as something that you need to be aware of.
How would that work? Would the state make an analysis of our public safety department, the number of people, their tenure, and come up with a number that we should book as a liability?
Well, a lot of the, you know, your calculations as it relates to retirement plans or your OPEB liability are done by an actuarial type calculation. Those calculations really are saying that our state, South Carolina plan, is underfunded. And the real concern was that a liability of the state of South Carolina, or was that a liability of all the entities like the cities and counties that are involved with the state plan from a cost-sharing plan? And it was determined that it wasn't the state's liability about probably 2 months ago, and that it was going to be the liability of the underlying participants in the plan. So of that unfunded amount in the state retirement system, if you were to pick up their audit report, your percentage would be based upon the number of people you have, and that would be just a calculated number every year for you.
And the state would make that calculation?
Yes.
And then we would...
whoever's, probably that calculation would be done more from the actuarial firm that was engaged.
Yeah, but our actuarial firm, I don't think, deals at all with public safety. It just deals with our own.
No, they would not. They would just, the actuary that we use deals with the regular employees.
Yes, yeah.
Retirement fund,
yeah, but,
not
but,
the state.
The state would have an actuarial firm doing their calculation of their plan.
Sure.
They would be the actuarial firm, the state's firm that they engage that would actually compute each other government entity that's involved in the plan's respective percentage.
So they would determine, they would tell us how much we need to book to make sure that we have the money to pay for public safety.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And would there be a transition, or would, I mean, let's say that's $3 million. Do we go from zero 1 year to $3 million the next year?
It would be a deduction from the salary. I know for audit purposes, we're talking about the city booking it. The city pays a portion, and the employee pays a portion.
Yeah. Do you see the state getting out of the retirement business for the law enforcement types?
I really don't. I think what's going to happen here is, as this liability is going to get divided up, the state's probably going to adjust how they're asking you to contribute on a current basis to kind of get rid of the unfunded status it's in right now?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned. I mean, they screwed it up, and, you know, I would just take the handle totally away from them, figure out some kind of a transition plan, you know, so the state, I mean, obviously it's been mismanaged, and all they're doing is now putting their hand out for some more money, and they're going to continue mismanaging it. And we don't have anything to say except pay.
I understand you're feeling that way. I went to a national conference at the end of October. This was a lot of discussion in this area because it's not only the state of South Carolina's plan, but Texas. It's a lot of states whose plans are underfunded right now. Who knows how our economy is going to continue to change in the future. I think some of the things that hopefully our country will continue to grow some and prosper, and that will help the assets that are already sitting there. I think the weakness in the economy is something that's contributing right now to the plan, all state plans being a little underfunded.
Does this audit contain an opinion on our employee pension plan funding capability?
It does. Let me direct you there. You can see your plan on page 25 and 26. You had right at $21.5 million in assets held. There's a lot of note disclosure in here also, but your plan was actually overfunded right at $300,000 at the end of this audit period. Page 49, you'll see some trend information. And at the middle of page 49 on line 8, you'll see your net pension obligation was an asset. It was overfunded by $321,313 at the end of the audit period.
On page 58, the bottom of page 58 there, it says schedule of employer contributions. That is actually what the city is paying in. What you've been talking about, so I assume this is the actual dollar. So in 2011 fiscal year, we put in $1.36 million.
Yes, that is correct.
That's, mm-hmm. And that's the same as you're talking about on page 49 and these others. That's what we actually paid from the city budget.
Yes, mm-hmm. You're reading that correct. You're required to give, and this on page 58 is what they consider required supplementary information, and you're required to give at least 10 years of trend numbers here as it relates to your plan and the funding status and the contributions actually made. In your note disclosures on page 48 and 49, you're only required to give 3 years' worth of information. So.
The other thing, back on page 53, when you mentioned at the very top of the page, you mentioned unfunded liability.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean in terms of dollars? Are we where we should be, or are we not putting enough in? Are we putting too much in? Is that what's typically carried into the future for future payment, because you're not using it all in one day, obviously?
On the top of page 53.
I mean 53, excuse me.
Yeah, 53, excuse me, yeah. That is your other post-employment benefit obligation. That's what you're offering your retirees as it relates to primarily health care insurance premiums that you're paying. This was a new standard probably, 5 years ago for most governments to adopt and have to deal with. And we're seeing a lot of our South Carolina governments unable to fund obligation. A lot of our county governments are leaving it unfunded except for the current retirees that they were paying as they go for. You're actually, you know, making payments for your retirees, if you see the bottom of page 52, right at $325,000. But in addition, you put another $225,000 into a trust fund. You're probably doing more than what I see our county governments doing. Of course, our school districts and universities are with the state plan, so they're not having to deal with this. The only people I've actually seen government in our government sector clients being able to really fund their OPEB liability 100% have been our special purpose districts, where they're charging a rate for a service they're providing. So they're operating more like a for-profit entity and being able to actually raise the rates to find the funding source for this OPEB liability.
Which of these numbers is how much we paid in, you know, in the last fiscal year of 2010 and 11? How much did we pay into it? I know you said that, but I wanted to mark it in my book.
Oh, on bottom of page 52, you see line 6 is your contribution that you made for current employees, and line 7 is your payments that you made for the retiree benefits. You see those $225,324?
And that keeps us current. And so if we pay that much every year, a prorated amount, then we would be current with our liabilities.
No.
No. This liability is going to continue to build. Like you can see on line 8 at the bottom of page 52, our liability increased right at $1.9 million for the year. So we really didn't fund it. But you are pretty much from a... of what we see in our governmental practice, you are doing better, a little bit better than what we're seeing our other governments be able to do.
So if I ask 10 years in advance, we're going to have a big number there, right?
Right. This number is going to grow very big. We have seen people revisit this benefit that they're offering and maybe grandfather in existing employees and change the benefit a little bit to try to contain the growth on this liability a little.
Okay, thank you.
But on the top of page 53, right, sort of top, where it says 2011, the percentage contributed is 22.19%. Does that mean that we're 77-point-something% underfunded?
That is in relation to your, yes, that would be at the end of the 2011 audit period. That's benching your cost against your total liability of 4.8. So, yes, you are correct in your statement.
So from 2009, we had a $1.1 million deficit. Now we're at the $4.8 million. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you have no way of predicting the effects of changes in the medical program at the national level, how they would affect, but that's a pretty scary number.
Right. You're growing at almost $2 million a year, which is a big number.
Now, is that something that's eventually going to affect your audit if we get too far downstream, and if that number were not $4.8 million, if it were $14.8 million, would that cause you to warn us that we need to do something about it?
If you go back to the first page 13, where we were looking at your numbers, your statement of net assets, you have to ask yourself at the end of the day, you'll see that unrestricted at $19 million. How many years would it take me to absorb my unrestricted net assets at $19 million at a growth of $2 million a year? So, yes.
Is that $19 million, is that money that could be applied to this?
Yes, that's correct.
The 19 mil is basically the rainy day fund, so to speak.
There is some new terminology out there, and the standards called stabilization or rainy day fund. Yes, you could say that. Yes, that is funds that are unrestricted that you could use to put, to any specific purpose that you would agree to.
Laurie, in lay term, if you would explain this to the audience, the growth in terms of the funds, that is attributed to the city paying and not our asking the employees to pay more into the medical or retirement fund.
Yes.
That's lay term.
You are correct. That is the city's liability. So what the city has agreed to do under the existing plan for the employee out of the city funds. Mm-hmm.
On page 36 and 37, you make three statements with regard to risk, that the city does not have a deposit policy for custodial risk, even though you say it's not a problem, and the city does not have a formal investment policy that limits investment maturities, and again, that does not appear to be a problem, and the city places a 3% limit on the amount the city may invest in any one issuer, and that does not seem to be a problem. Are those policies that we should have? Should we have a deposit policy for custodial credit risk?
I have seen some governments adopt policies as it relates to cash and investments. What you're required by law under the first custodial credit to risk as far as the deposits is you're required by state law to ask the bank to collateralize or pledge assets for any deposits you have in excess of $250,000 okay. Right now with them. We test your compliance to make sure that your deposits are safeguarded as part of the audit, and you did have the respective banks pledging collateral. So as long as you're complying with that law, none of your deposits are going to be at risk. So we commonly don't see a formal policy there. You can adopt that. I can give you some samples to look at. Don't normally see that. Going to your investment rate.
One second. But you looked at the collateralization of the $8.5 million.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. You're satisfied that it's okay.
Yes. Yeah. You are compliant that you do have those funds adequately collateralized.
Okay.
Your interest rate risk as far as maturities, you see that on top of page 37. Mm-hmm. We show your investment maturities in years, and you see we have very little in the 5 to 10 year, which is a good thing. You know, if you were to adopt a policy here, you'd want to make sure that you were going short term on your U.S. Treasury notes or your U.S. government agencies. You're definitely going short term anyway. You just don't have a policy that says this in, a formal adopted policy.
From your audits of other municipalities, we've got almost $22 million with the state LGIP pool, and their payments are paltry. Obviously, we make more with our pension assets. Do you see municipalities kind of doing away or getting their money out of this the state pool and assuming more risk for more return?
Normally, if I don't answer your question, ask me again another way here. We don't normally see a city or county managing a retirement fund like you have. So you're kind of a little outside the box in that you have your own retirement fund, which is actually probably good for your employees because you're able to make sure that you're overseeing that from a fiduciary capacity as far as the investments. So you're able to, kind of evaluate that. I think it's a good thing. Do I see other governments pulling funds out of the state? Not really, because they probably are a little short-staffed and they don't have the capabilities to really think about doing that now. Will that come in the future? I don't know. We could see some movement there. I just haven't had a lot of reaction yet to where the state's going with the unfunded status. So.
Okay. And we may have questions at the next reading, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're available, at any time, if you have some questions that you want to, or just get some new information about what this means. In particular, if you're reading the actuarial reports, they get kind of confusion to most people.
Mayor, I did want to read the title of the ordinance into the record. I don't believe I did that at the outset. And the title is an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2010-11 audited financial statement.
I did want to also bring to your attention that I've worked with Kim and Cammie as it relates to your comprehensive annual financial report. They do have that ready to go and bound, and we'll be submitting that to GFOA again this year. And that is an achievement in itself. It's a lot of hard work that goes into that. There's a lot of great statistical tables in the back that I would encourage you, if you need to look for some information. Like you say, there's a lot back there. That's going to the extra effort to provide the most comprehensive financial information you can to your community there. And I do think they're to be applauded for going to that extra effort. We don't see that with all our cities or with all our counties or school districts, but they have been doing that for ever since I've been working with the city and numerous years. So
it certainly is an excellent report. It's got all kinds of wonderful information. We thank Kim and her staff, too, for what the effort they put forth. Also, the other city employees that work with her, including our city manager.
Thank you, Mayor.
Any other questions, comments to Laurie? Laurie, thank you so much, but again, for a great report. Very comprehensive, to say the least.
We would need a motion, Mayor.
Mayor, I move that we adopt this ordinance to accept the 2010-11 audited financial statement and add to that. Laura, you did a very thorough job in explaining that, and I appreciate your time and the thoroughness of the report that you provided to us.
Thank you. I'll second that. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Approve it.
Mayor, if I might add something, Ed Giobi serves on the pension, what is it, Ed, you serve on the state? Retirement Systems Investment. At some point in time, I know that he's doing a great job there. It would be nice to have a 15-minute or so report from him to find out where that's going, because he's got some tremendous insight with what's going on with the state. So.
Mm-hmm.
There's always confusion on the retirement system, but the retirement system that we have six commissioners, essentially our responsibility is to manage the assets, to allocate the assets. Basic problem in the unfunded liability that was addressed by the last speaker, it's approximately $17 billion. The problem is that going back over a number of years, the legislature increased the benefits without commensurately increasing the contributions to the fund. So that going back to perhaps the year 2002, the pension fund was perhaps 85% funded. It was in very good shape. But if you look at a chart, you'll see from it, right, there was a point where the benefits started going like that and the contributions stayed flat. So in essence, the promised more than they could deliver. Unfortunately, South Carolina was not alone in doing that. There are many, many other states that are in the same position. The commission is not responsible for adjusting either the contributions to the fund or the benefits. That is a responsibility, essentially a budget control, and also the legislature essentially have to be determined by the legislature. We did reduce, the Budget and Control Board several weeks ago did reduce the assumed rate of return from 8% to 7.5% and reduced the COLA from 2% to 1%. So by reducing the COLA, that essentially does reduce the amount of money that retirees receive. Greg Ryberg, Senator Ryberg, and Governor Haley are very much aware of the problem of the unfunded liability and have both are working to introduce or to craft legislation in the coming in the new legislative session in January that will address the problem. How that will all shake out has to be determined. But essentially, There's no getting around the fact that it has to be addressed. This is not a problem that can simply be left to work itself out. It won't work itself out. We can hope that the assets will appreciate in value dramatically. They can appreciate dramatically. That will not solve the problem. It has to be solved by either some form of change in the benefits or an increase in the contributions, or probably a combination of all three. So it is a problem. It needs to be addressed. It can't be shuffled off or kick the can down the road. But I think that the powers to be in Columbia are well aware of it, and I think it will require the intestinal fortitude and the political courage and all that goes along with it to address the problem and not to sweep it under the rug. It cannot be swept under the rug. If people want to receive their pensions years from now, this is an issue that will have to be addressed.
Ed, how long has this been going on? Many, many years.
2002.
They've been kicking it down the road many, many years.
Exactly right, Mr. Mayor.
It's amazing that no one took any action, or we haven't heard more about it.
Well, I think there was always the feeling that the next legislature would do something about it. It's not a pleasant task for any politician to want to raise taxes or to cut benefits for state employees. I mean, that's a fact of life. Right. But we are past the point of no return. If people want to receive their pensions, then we have to address the problem to ensure. It's no different than Social Security. If we take the proper actions, people will receive their payments. If we don't, at some point in the future, either the benefits will be cut or there simply won't be enough money to go around. So I think we have to face the music and hope that the legislature does the right thing. But I think they will, they're certainly aware of it. I think they will address it, and then it becomes a question of just how serious and how stringent they want to address the problem. But I think Governor being very cognizant of this problem, I'm confident that she is going to attack the problem in a very strenuous way, and then it will be up to the legislature to work with her to effect a good solution to it.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the next item, item two, first reading of an ordinance to amend the Woodside Development Concept Plan.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance amending the concept plan for property located at 1419 Silver Bluff Road and owned by Woodside Development LP. This tract is approximately 2.97 acres. Woodside Plantation residents are not allowed to operate motorcycles in their subdivision, and the modification to the concept plan is to allow construction of two storage barns on the property to be used by Woodside Plantation residents to store motorcycles and by Woodside Development to store items related to their business. This did go before the Planning Commission. They unanimously approved revision of this concept plan upon the conditions that the development comply with the submitted concept plan, building elevations, and narrative. That minor changes to the buildings and site, including tree preservation, may be approved by the planning director, and that the owner execute an agreement listing the conditions of approval, and that the agreement be recorded by the city at the RMC office within 90 days of approval by city council. For your review and action, is this ordinance on first reading to approve the revision of the Woodside development plan to allow two storage barns to be built on 2.97 acres at 1419 Silver Bluff Road.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second to approve this?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I do have a question for either Wesley or Patton. It's about the metal roofs. I think we need to clarify that about the designation. Is this in the Woodside POA or outside of? So, and the real question is, are metal roofs allowed? Being now this is on city property versus the barn is referred to is in the county.
Oh, good evening, city council members. My name is Wesley Elijah.
I had this conversation with Melanie Brock, the property manager of Woodside Property Owner Association, and in fact, the property is outside the covenants and restrictions of Woodside Plantation. So to answer your question, the first question, it does not relate to Woodside Property Owner Association, therefore does not fall under those guidelines for the metal roof.
Okay, so that's not an issue. That property then, so the boundary of that is just the right-of-way of the roads then?
Yes, sir. That's my understanding. That's correct.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just a question. Does the tree ordinance play into any of this or any trees involved in
this? Yes, sir. We've marked trees that may potentially be impacted. There's an opportunity for us to potentially adjust these barns. Certainly, our goal is to minimize any tree impact. But yes, sir, there is, and we have tagged them. We have ribboned the trees. There's approximately four that have ribbons around them right now, but that doesn't imply that all four will be removed.
But the staff is, you're working with the staff to make sure the tree ordinance is
complied
with?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Exactly how many vehicles would be stored in these two barns?
Ma'am, there are proposed two barns that, if I'm not mistaken, according to our submittal, had eight on each barn, so there's 16 storage facilities proposed. So at some point in time, there could potentially be 16 motorcycles stored in these barns.
And most of the residents are okay with this?
Yes, ma'am. That was certainly our goal up front, was to work with the Property Owners Association just to ensure that we had their support before moving for council.
Okay. Thank you, Wesley.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Wesley.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Item 3, resolution to accept the deed of dedication to Hamilton Drive and Nielsen Street.
Thank you, Mayor. As Council's aware, we have finished the construction of the Pawnee-Nielsen Connector as part of this project. Aiken County was the owner of two rights-of-way. Those were the rights-of-way for Hamilton Drive and Nielsen Street. As part of this project, we asked the county for title to these rights-of-way in order for us to pursue the Council's stated goal of reducing the amount of traffic on the major arteries in the city of Aiken. For council consideration is the acceptance of a deed of dedication. This is a resolution, so there's only one reading for these two rights of way.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Motion to adopt this acceptance of the dedication deed from Aiken County for the right of way of Nielsen and Hamilton Drive. Second.
Have a second. Any discussion?
Yeah, I do. I have a question on Hamilton Drive. I hope the question's been resolved, but actually somebody bid, it was put on the auction block, I guess, because of non-payment of taxes, and it actually was part of a roadway, and an individual actually bid on it and became the owner of Hamilton Drive. Is that still a factor, or has that been resolved by the county?
The county did resolve that, as best I understand. That was a tax sale.
Yes.
And, of course, you don't obtain, as I understand, Mr. Smith, you correct me at any time, you don't obtain title to the property until you file a title clearing action now at the courthouse and have the court order that you own the property. And the owner of record was Aiken County, that we actually have the deed from that's in your materials. Unfortunately, at one time, I think the county assigned a tax parcel number to rights of way, much to our chagrin. And when taxes weren't paid on the rights of way, I don't know who's supposed to pay that tax bill. They sent it to tax office, they had a tax parcel number.
Well, as long as we know it's been taken care of, like you said.
Right.
Okay, any other thoughts? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4 is first reading of an ordinance to grant an easement to SCE&G at the Aiken Municipal Airport. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to grant an easement to South Carolina Electric and Gas Company. We are, as part of the instrument landing system at the municipal airport, have installed a localizer, have installed a DME, and are in process of installing the glide slope installation of that system. In order for the equipment to work, there needs to be electricity to it, and South Carolina Electric and Gas serves this area. We need to have this easement so we can have a glide slope system that works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, makes sense. Do we have a motion and a second?
I'll move.
To approve. I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please.
When do we schedule the grand opening?
We hope. Now, these are fingers crossed and toes crossed. We hope it's before Masters Week next year.
Yes.
Otherwise, what happens to Larry Morris?
There might be a mustache trimming or something.
Oh, gosh. Okay, on item 5, was taken off of the agenda, deleted, and we added first reading of an ordinance to advance municipal building expansion funds.
Yes, thanks, Mayor. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance authorizing borrowing from the City of Aiken General Fund Reserve accounts as outlined in the ordinance for the purpose of funding Phase 1 of the Municipal Building Expansion Project. The voters have approved $3 million set aside in the third round of capital project sales tax monies for expansion of the municipal building. We believe we have an opportunity to potentially expand City Hall operations and have additional space as well as additional meeting space, something that we discuss from time to time. This ordinance is just for first reading purposes only. We've added it to the agenda. We would have to have a second reading, and my intent is at the December 12th meeting to have a full report to you as far as the opportunities that we do have. It's just before we can pursue those opportunities, we need to make sure that funding would be in place. Any contractual matters that would be involved, of course, would be contingent upon approval by City Council, and we anticipate having a resolution on the December 12 meeting for council consideration public hearing.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, under petitions and requests, item 1, accommodation tax committee funding. Here, please.
Thank you, Mayor. As council will recall, you approved some weeks ago a report from the accommodations tax committee for various distributions to local events and organizations to promote activities in Aiken that we believe, or they believe, would produce heads on beds, which of course is where the accommodations tax money originates. Every year we hold back some funds so that the committee will have an opportunity to review any mid-year requests for funding for their events. They did hold a meeting on November 9. At that meeting, approved $4,697 for Aiken Performing Arts Group for their Graskles Bluegrass Concert, $5,025 for Aiken Preparatory School for their 2012 Prep Fest, and $5,278 for Juilliard and Aiken, their Spring Music Festival that you heard the presentation on tonight. That totals $15,000. That will leave us with a balance of $2,386. And for council approval is the accommodations tax recommendation for distribution of the $15,000 parceled out amongst the three different events that are listed in my memo.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I make a motion that we approve the accommodations tax committee contingency funding to these three entities.
Okay, we have a second. Any discussion?
I'd just like at some time to get an update on how this money can be used, because I understand, Richard, you've told me it's changed. When I did it for the Highland Games, it was only advertising, only 50 miles away, and I think you indicated there's been a change. So maybe the next time, next year, when we do this, we can put a couple of sentences in there on how the money can be spent.
We can.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Show of hands, please. Item 2, traffic management ordinance review. Here's
Thank you, Mayor. At the last meeting, Councilmember Wells expressed an interest in reviewing the traffic management ordinance that's in place for the city of Aiken. And I met with our planning director. He had a discussion with staff and reviewed some potential areas for the traffic management ordinance to be revised or amended. And we've provided that to council for your review. We also have the actual traffic management ordinance, which is City Code Section 42-176 and other sections. So for purposes of the discussion tonight, and in order for us to get better direction from council on how you would like us to proceed, we have these matters before you for consideration and discussion.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
What we would do based on the discussion tonight is then prepare an ordinance, because to change the traffic management ordinance, which is an existing city code section, it would take another ordinance.
Okay, sir. Do we have any comments?
Mr. Mayor, one reason why I had requested us to review the traffic management ordinance is because we are currently requesting that on rezoning of property. If there's 18 or 19 acres located somewhere within the city of Aiken and someone requests a zoning change on that piece of property, let's say if they were changing the zoning from an RS6, a residential single family, to an RMH, multifamily, immediately we are requesting them to have a traffic study done on that piece of property. And we're also basing that on the maximum use possible of that piece of property, regardless of what they're planning on building on that piece of property. If someone wanted to, sought a particular zoning to build some duplexes, and they sought to change the zoning from RS6 to an RMH, then they're automatically going to, the planning department is automatically going to figure out how many apartments that piece of property could hold with proper green space, regardless of what might be going on that piece of property, and require a traffic study to be done prior to the zone change. I submit to you that that is not the time for a traffic study, but a traffic study should be done when someone submits a site plan for what they intend on building on that piece of property. We just had an incident which I had to get involved in that was involving a piece of property on Highway 19, which, as far as I'm concerned, that's an excellent area of Aiken for someone to develop something. Mm-hmm. They wanted to change the zoning from an RS6 to an RMH. The planning department requested a traffic study to be done prior to the zoning change, based upon a maximum build-out on that 18-acre piece of property. No consideration of what might be put there or when it might be put there. If a developer or a landowner has to pay $7,000-$8,000 for a traffic study just to change the zoning of a piece of property, the actual build out of that piece of property may not be for, they may even start it in 2 years, they may not start it in 4 years. It may be 8 years down the road before the project is actually built. And that traffic study that was done and requested by the traffic management ordinance is no longer valid. And so a new traffic study has to be done in order for when the site plan is issued. So I would suggest that this is just one of the things that we found here in the traffic management ordinance that seems to be unfair. Another thing that I have found with the traffic management ordinance is, in my estimation, maybe I'm wrong, but a traffic study on a piece of property for a project is not to determine whether or not a project can go at that particular site, but it's to determine what improvements needs to be made in the infrastructure in order to carry that number of trips per day. So when we go back and we look at individual pieces of property, And let's say if someone wanted to change a piece of property, and I'm just going to use this for instance, for someone to place a dry cleaner's out on Highway 19, and so they ask for the zoning change on this piece of property to be to general business, then automatically the traffic management ordinance comes into play, and because there could possibly be a convenience store in a general business location, then the number of trips that's counted per day is the maximum that could be put on that piece of property, regardless of what is actually going on that piece of property. If a dry cleaner's was going on that piece of property, they're not going to create as many trips per day as would a convenience store. So, I mean, I can understand if a convenience store is going there, then let's look at those numbers as to whether or not we're going to require the traffic study. If a dry cleaner's is going in that spot, then why don't we look at what traffic they generate rather than automatically assuming the worst and using that number to trigger the TMO to come into play requiring a traffic study. I know during excellent economic times, traffic management ordinance and studies, you know, the cost of that can be passed along to others. During the difficult economic times in which we're in now, you know, I see it as just being an added burden to the smaller projects and smaller business entities that are trying to develop within our city.
Mm-hmm. John, I would ask, and maybe Ed can help us, so why is it like this? Why is it written like this? Is it possible that because, let's say it's going to be the dry cleaners, Don, but something bigger could go there, and the dry cleaners over time period sells to someone else, and they want to come in and build something bigger. Is it then possible to have a traffic analysis, or can they just do that, and then all of a sudden you've got more traffic, Don? Am I making any sense?
Yeah, well, that's one of the issues. I mean, if you've got the dry cleaner and the dry cleaner goes out of business,
yeah,
and something else goes in, it's a higher higher traffic volume.
Yeah.
And they don't even need to come to the city to do it because, as I understand it, once it's zoned for something, as long as they're complying with the zoning, they can do whatever they want.
Well, that's the point.
And we may end up with a situation where we have a usage. The dry cleaner was fine, but now it's X number of years and there's something else going in.
I totally agree with what you're saying, but what is it that we can put in place that if the dry cleaners decided to go out of business 4 years later and someone decided to move in and open a convenience store, that they would have in their permitting process?
Yeah, that's a major question. I mean, that's a concern I would
have
with the change.
That's where it needs to be and not in the rezoning of the property.
Right.
Yeah, but they don't have to go to the Planning Commission to put a gas station in place of the cleaners as long as it's zoned properly.
Not to stomp on common sense, because what you're saying makes plenty of perfect sense.
It does.
But the problem that Ed has is once the property goes from being Zone A to Zone B, he and his staff can at that point no longer deny any property that is allowed in Zone B, any use that's allowed in Zone B. If it's in the use table, if it's allowed in Zone B, then Ed has to issue them a building permit to allow them to build the building that they're asking to be built. So once council agrees to rezone the property, you seem to be saying things that we learned in law school are not allowed. There used to be a term called contract zoning, where the city would agree to rezone a piece of property in return for that property owner signing a contract that says, this is what I'm going to use the property for. Okay? And the way the Supreme Court opinions come down on that particular thing is, you know, it says what you're doing is you're taking your zoning ordinance, and your zoning ordinance says if you use Zone B, I can use these 10 different uses. But now this property owner comes to you with this request, recognizing a gas station may be an overly severe use of this property at this particular location, but it's allowed under the zoning ordinance. So to entice the city to go along with the zoning change, he says, I know I could use it as a gas station, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to use it for this. And it sounds a lot like planned commercial or planned residential zoning, which can get you the results you're looking for. But when it's property that's zoned as general business, whoever buys that property, say they develop it as a dry cleaner, and the dry cleaner decides to sell. The buyer, when they go to do a title search for the property to decide whether they want to buy this property or not, they're going to come up to Ed's office and say, what's this property zoned? If the property is zoned general business, all they have to do is open up the zoning ordinance. They can find out what uses are allowed there. And then they know that it's okay for them to build a gas station because that property is zoned general business. And so I think that's why the traffic management ordinance is set up the way it is now. If we're going to do a rezoning, if you're going to approve a rezoning, you have to do it based on the understanding, what's the worst case scenario if we decide to approve this rezoning? How is this going to comply with our comprehensive plan? I'm not saying you couldn't modify the traffic management ordinance, and I think our traffic management engineer would have to buy into this to do something along the lines of what you're talking about. And that's something that would have to be researched.
It's legal to do that, though.
I think it would be. I think it would be legal to do it. I just don't think you can. You can't have a property owner come to you with a request for a rezoning. And you've had these before. A lot of times when they come to you with a rezoning, the property owner or the developer tells you, I'm going to build a dry cleaners here. Mm-hmm. He can go bankrupt tomorrow, and we don't have any control over what he's ultimately going to use that property for. But we know that the day you approve the rezoning, it then becomes whatever somebody wants it to be, as long as it's allowed by that zoning.
Well, would it be beneficial to have a more, sub zoning types, where you can actually restrict it, divide that, make a dry cleaners different from a convenience store. I mean, a new category, if you will, of zoning.
You have that flexibility, certainly.
And I wonder too if it might be beneficial for the conversation if we did a just survey of similarly sized South Carolina cities that have these traffic management ordinances and just see what revisions they've made to address some of the issues that Councilmember Wells, the Chief, raised tonight.
Another thing that, of course, dealing along the same lines is, of course, Councilman DeWar and myself both have recommended or would love to see the point in which the City of Aiken could hire our own traffic engineer. I would like to see that done. I know we've used an outside consulting firm for many years here in the City of Aiken, and I think they've done a decent job, or a good job, but I just think that somebody that lives here in the City of Aiken, that knows the City of Aiken, that knows our streets, that travels our streets on a daily basis, could do a much better job of coming forth with the traffic studies, coming forth with the right ordinances that we need in place to protect us, but not be overburdensome upon our citizens and people who are trying to make an investment in our community. And here again, the thing that, I saw just over the past couple of weeks, so here's a piece of property out on Highway 19, on the other side of the bypass. Looking at the traffic study, Highway 19 is saying a level of service D, which whatever project that you put out there, if it triggered more than 1,000 trips a day or added cars to that road, there's 10,000 cars that travel that road on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. That's average. It's a level of service D, and so an apartment complex with 300 units out to the north side of Aiken, where we need development, where it would be welcomed out there because you don't have a traffic jam out there. You don't have a lockup out there. Look at the same road scenario there at South Boundary and Whiskey, Chesterfield. We've got a two-lane road. You have over 20,000 trips a day there that a couple of times a day gets backed up a little bit, but travels and flows very freely. And now because of a project that would add 1,000 trips a day to Highway 19, we're going to require them to have a traffic study in an area where we need development. And that's the current ordinance as it's written.
Well, we need to look at the ordinance and see what can be changed to correct these things that are being brought up, Don. I'm glad you brought them up. But isn't that the simple answer? Let's get planning to look at the ordinance and with whoever we need to talk to, Roger Dyer.
And we could certainly, Mayor, look at other cities as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I agree with, I support what Councilman Wells is stating regarding the undue burden and hardship that we're possibly imposing on small business, one. But secondly, here's an area that is already highly, a road that's highly traveled, and you have to deal with reality. What's reality here versus having a law on the books that is ineffective and causing some undue hardship on the developers? So, I know that we want to try to control things as much as possible, but then there's dealing with real life situations as well. So.
Okay, do we have a?
You can just receive this for information, Mayor, and we'll go back to the drawing board and see what we can find out based on the comments we have tonight.
Okay. All right. We'll just do that.
And I should point out, we only talked about one of the items. I don't know whether staff loaded up because there was a traffic study time at the zoning, at time of rezoning, the number of trips, differing levels of service on a road. There were about five or six items.
Right.
And I guess we need to study as well.
That's right, yes. Yes, we'll look at all of that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, one more thing. If, in fact, we had an in-house traffic engineer, he would have an integrated view of the city and basically, instead of piecemeal coming in looking at places in isolation, he would have an overall feel for the city, and actually he might be able to make a judgment that no traffic study is required.
Sounds like we have another person on our side, Don. We only need one more.
And the revenue to cover the cost.
I don't think that any of us would not want that to happen. It's a cost thing, and we just got to resolve that, and maybe we can do that in the budget. Okay, item 3, December council meeting schedule.
Mayor, thank you very much. Typically, council has met only once in December, and it's a critical issue this year because an actual city holiday is December 26th, and so that staff can spend time with their families over the holiday season, we're asking for approval by council to have one meeting in December. That would be December 12th, 2011. Of course, if an emergency came up or it was necessary, we could schedule a special call meeting. But as far as your meeting schedule in December, the request is just have one meeting and delete the December 26th.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
And I think we should stick with tradition and cancel the second council meeting except if it's an emergency.
Okay. Very good. Second. We have a second. Okay. Any discussion on that? Show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Now we need to council, if council agrees, we need to go into executive session to discuss a potential contractual opportunity that's come up. So do we have a motion and a second?
I'm going to ask the city attorney before when we added something, is this okay to do it? Because I was turned down before on
executive session.
This is an issue that has been before council. It was before council at the last council meeting, and Mr. Pierce is giving you a follow-up from that meeting. That's the purpose of this executive session.
Oh, it's a personnel issue, or?
No, sir.
Economic development.
Economic development.
I heard personal, so I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
Economic development.
Okay, I'll move. We go to adjourn or whatever.
All right, we had a motion and a second. Who seconded?
I moved.
Okay. All right. First. All in favor?
All.
Passes unanimous.
Didn't I do that?
Yes.
I thought it did.
This is just a reminder to citizens of the county sales tax. And we'll have a complete discussion of presentations for December.
Well,
I've already done that. I've already talked with Gary, and he's going to look on that tomorrow. I was rushing, trying to get it in.
Okay, council is back in session now. We need a motion and a second to come out of the executive session.
Move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All in favor, show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously to come out of executive session. We went in to discuss a potential contractual issue, and we did discuss that, and we did not vote on anything. There was no vote taking place. So that is the end of the discussion on this. And we are adjourned from our council meeting.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
One under the belt, Gail.
Well, yeah, I was telling the mayor, y'all made me feel so comfortable. I really...